This Is Your Life, episode 71. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Well, this is part three of a special podcast series that I'm doing with my wife, Gail. It's entitled Help, I'm Married to an Entrepreneur. You may be the entrepreneur. You may be married to the entrepreneur. Both of you may be entrepreneurs. Regardless, this podcast series is for you. And in the first session, which we did a couple weeks ago, we talked about the role of the non-entrepreneurial spouse who is married to an entrepreneur. In our case, that was Gail. But specifically, we looked at five gifts that they can give to the entrepreneurial spouse or the leader or the one who's the corporate executive or the one who's playing that role in the marriage. Then last week, we turned the tables and we talk directly to the entrepreneur. And in our case, that happens to be me. But similar to the first week, we shared five gifts you can give to your spouse to keep from blowing up your marriage in the pursuit of your entrepreneurial vision. And this week, I'm the most excited about Gail because we're going to be taking questions from our listeners and hopefully get it into the nitty-gritty where the rubber meets the road, really practical stuff. So are you about ready to get started?
I am. We have some good questions, I think.
Yep, we really do. Well, first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or taking it to the next level. You can find out more at platformuniversity.com. We've got about eight questions that we've sifted through out of all that we received. I want to remind you as we begin, we're not experts. We're fellow travelers, often cases fellow strugglers. We've had ups and downs in our marriage. We've had some wins, some losses, but we're always learning and we've really become students of marriage. So let's start with the first question, and it comes from Ben.
Hi, Michael. This is Ben Fanning, Chief Burnout Officer and Burnout Specialist at benfanning.com. I think the topic of how to accomplish your dreams without blowing up your marriage is an awesome topic. My question is, how do you open the conversation around the sacrifices of entrepreneurship with a spouse that maybe has more of a traditional 9-to-5 type job? Obviously, entrepreneurs that are starting a business work crazy hours, but albeit often more flexible type hours. So I think it's a really important issue to bring up, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks for addressing such a great topic.
Thanks, Ben. That is a very good question. And what I loved about it was the fact that you mentioned, how do you open the conversation? How do you discuss the sacrifices of entrepreneurship with a spouse who's come from a more traditional 9-to-5 background? And that's actually my story, because my family was very unfamiliar with the entrepreneurial lifestyle. That was just something we never lived. My mom worked, my dad worked, but they didn't have an entrepreneurial bone in their body. So I just never was acquainted with what that would look like. And frankly, that caused a lot of conflict in our marriage, because I had a lot of expectations that he would be home at 5, that he would, you know, do certain things that my dad did, and that wasn't the case. So I think that what helped us is that we really worked on having open, honest, frequent communication. I think that's the key. And so you can't really have a good discussion, have good communication, if the other person is going to feel defensive. And if somehow you communicate that you've found the better way and that the traditional spouse has sold out to the man or something like that, but you want to communicate that you honor him or her and you validate him or her in the choices and the background that she's made, that he or she has come from.
Yeah. And as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, sacrifice only makes sense in the context of a shared vision. So that's really what you've got to get united around, is that shared vision. So if I were discussing this with Gail for the first time, and knowing now, of course, what I didn't know then, I would start with the vision. You know, what is it that we want to achieve in our marriage? What is it that we want from our lives? What are our hopes and dreams about retirement and, you know, our lifestyle, all those things, but to try to have as much of a shared vision so that the entrepreneurial enterprise becomes a means to that end. So that it's not just, you know, something that's his deal or her deal or the other party's deal, but it's something that you share in together so that you can own the sacrifice together. Because if you can own the sacrifice together, then you have a context, you have a shared basis so that it gives it meaning, and you don't end up resenting the other person because this is something we share. It's something that I signed up for. And I wished I had done that with you. A better job of that is in enrolling you in that vision and giving you permission to disagree with me. Because I think sometimes what happens is the entrepreneur goes off without that kind of ownership on the part of the supporting spouse.
Because they're very enthusiastic.
Yeah. You know, and they're right. I mean, in their own mind, you know, they can't fail. And so they don't want to be challenged. They don't want anybody putting the brakes on it. And yet you've really got to talk it through. You've got to, and the word that I like is enroll the supporting spouse or, yeah, even your kids, but to enroll them in it so they have that sense of shared ownership so that when the sacrifice inevitably comes, you know, it's not a surprise and it doesn't have a context. It needs that context.
The other thing that's important to ask yourself is your spouse reacting to the entrepreneurial enterprise itself and the whole idea of being an entrepreneur, or is there something else that they're reacting to? Are they feeling neglected? Are they tired of being broke? You know, those kinds of things, because it could be that the business isn't really the issue, that there's something underneath of it. And what I love to do is think of questions that you can ask your spouse that helps them to be able to communicate or discover what the real issues are. And one that might be helpful in this situation would be something like, what would have to happen for you to feel comfortable with my business? Or something like that. You know?
Yeah. So again, you're enrolling them in the process and communicating that their opinion, their perspective really does matter. You know, you're not the only one with a perspective and that you're going to go into this no matter what, but you want to do it together because you've been given a spouse for a reason, and your entrepreneurial enterprise will have a much higher probability of success if you're both in the boat rowing together. If you're trying to do it yourself, it gets very lonely very fast. So Ben, great question. The next one comes from Denise.
Hi, Michael. My name is Denise Surgeon. My husband and I are both high achievers. 5 months ago, we welcomed our first baby. I have been back at work for almost 2 months, and I have been feeling overwhelmed. My question for you and your wife is, how do you balance your career and caring for yourself and your marriage with raising 5 children? And a bonus question, I'd be curious to know your thoughts on prioritizing these areas of life. Thanks so much. I really enjoy what you do.
One of the things that I did years ago, more than a decade ago, Denise, was create a life plan. And this was a concept that was introduced to me by Daniel Harkavy of Building Champions, who was my executive coach at the time. And he said, you know, you need a plan for your whole life because it's very easy in the midst of a very busy career to get focused on just your career and think that's the only priority. And if you do that, inevitably your health is going to suffer, your family life is going to suffer, other areas of your life that you don't give attention to are going to suffer. And the life plan is really an answer to 3 very important questions. Number 1, how do you want to be remembered? Number 2, what matters most to you? And number 3, how do you get from where you are to where you want to be? So I've actually written on this. I've got an ebook that you can find on this and download for free. You can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/life plan. But let me take that second part of the life plan, which is really the part of it that addresses the issue of priorities. You've got to get clear on what your priorities are. And again, in all of your life, where does it all fit together? What's the most important to you? Now, I'll just tell you from my perspective, God is number 1. I'm number 2. And that's sometimes a controversial thing, but I take it from the perspective of self-care. In other words, if I don't take care of myself, if I'm not in good health, if I'm not rested, if I'm not emotionally intact, I'm not a resource to other people. So I've got to take care of me first, just like when you take an airplane flight, you know, affix the oxygen to yourself first before you attempt to help anybody else. Same concept in play here. I want to take care of myself next. Then Gail comes third, my girls come fourth, and then my business comes after that. Now, as a practical matter, in the warp and woof of life, if I have to choose between one and the other, you know, I know what my priorities are because I've identified them. So identifying your priorities and literally writing them down. And I would begin by writing down every area of your life, and there's 9 or 10 of those probably for most people, and then to assign a number to them. What's number one? What's number two? What's number three? Different seasons of your life, those will fluctuate, but for right now, what is the priority for you? And then from there, give them visibility. Once you've identified your priorities, and my life plan is in Evernote, which is a software package that I use, kind of my digital brain. We've talked about it before, but that's where I have my life plan so that I'm looking at my priorities on a regular basis and reminding myself of what matters most. Because if you're not careful, the urgent will take precedent over the important. And what's important is your marriage and your family. What seems to be urgent sometimes is that customer who's upset or that project deadline that has to be met. Those are the things that are urgent, but they're not always important. So you've got to identify your priorities and then do your very best to schedule them and live by them. Gail, do you want to add to that?
Well, I was just thinking that when you were talking about seasons of life, I think that's really, really, really important to remember, because even Michael can tell you what he's doing right now and what his life is like. It looks very different now than it did when we had young children at home. And so you have to have realistic expectations of yourself and of your spouse and your business and all those kinds of things. And the way to stay realistic is to do this life plan and to continue to do it every single year, because your life changes from year to year. And so one of the things that we've done that I think has been invaluable is we try to get away once a quarter. Now, again, that may be more realistic at our stage of life, but we would review our life plans and talk about them. And then once a year, usually in December or January, then we would look at the upcoming year and set a new life plan for the upcoming year, but constantly revisiting it and reviewing it and changing it.
And it's not something that's set in stone, but as you said, the seasons are different, and you can't compare yourself against someone who's in a different season of life. It wouldn't be fair for you, if you've got young children, to compare yourself to me, because I don't have any children at home. So I've got a lot more discretionary time to pursue my business, to pursue the things that are important to me, and you won't always have that. So I think that's the important thing.
Another phrase, I can't remember if we mentioned it in one of the other podcasts or not, but that's been helpful to me is you can do anything you want, but you just can't do everything you want.
Yeah, I love that.
So the sky's the limit in terms of how you're going to spend your time, your days, how you're going to build these relationships and so forth, but you can't do everything. You will have to say no. And a lot of times the overwhelmed feeling is because we've said yes to too many things.
Yeah, and really priorities come down to choices. And you've got to say no a lot in order to say yes.
And that's hard, you know.
Things that are important.
Sometimes you have to say no to your children or to some friends that want you to do something. They're all good things. It's not that what they're asking is something bad. It's just you have to say no and do fewer things but do them better.
Yeah. Excellent. The next question comes from Evan.
Michael, it's Evan Moffick. I blog at rabbimoffick.com. I've loved this podcast series. And we are from different faith traditions, but as you and I have spoken about, our faiths play such a critical role in our lives. And I'm wondering what you and Gail, what role faith has brought to your relationship. How has it enriched your relationship, your family life, your values together? I know for my family, the Sabbath is so central to our family life. What practices and rituals have worked for you and Gail and your family? Thanks again for everything. Talk to you soon.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for that question. Faith definitely plays a humongous part in our personal lives, the life of our family, and into our business and everything. It permeates everything. And I was just thinking that faith gives us perspective. It gives us a reference point for all the decisions we make and how we interpret the events that happen. It offers me peace because it frees me from worry and feeling like everything depends upon me. But I know that there's my creator who's a bigger force in my life than just me. And so that helps me to relax and be at peace. And then faith offers me purpose. It helps me to answer the question, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I in this family? Why am I in this business? And it gives me vision. It gives me accountability and a destination. Where do I want to end up? So that's kind of the global view of faith. And the other thing I think it does for us is it helps us know, it gives us a code of conduct. It enables us to gain wisdom have a source for wisdom and direction as we're making decisions for our family and our businesses and things like that. And it gives me a person that I want my life to be pleasing to God. So everything kind of revolves around that.
Yeah, and I think for me, you know, the role that faith plays is that it gives me a sense of transcendent meaning, because, you know, the business sometimes is frustrating. Sometimes you're not seeing the progress you would like. Sometimes it's requiring everything. It's exhausting. And there's a lot of sacrifices we were talking about in answer to Ben's question. But it gives me a sense of transcendent meaning. So I know, as you said, there's purpose in the midst of it. And in terms of the specific practices, I can tell you the things that have been meaningful to us and have grown our marriage is that for us, attendance at church on a weekly basis is one of the touchstones of our life. You know, that's a place where we can set aside some time to get out of the busyness of life and again, get reoriented, recalibrated, realigned with what's ultimately true and what's ultimately important. So for us, we come out of an Eastern Orthodox tradition. So church for us begins on Saturday night with a Vespers service. And that kind of gets us acclimated to the next morning where we have, you know, a fuller Sunday morning Eucharistic worship experience. And so that's the touchstone of our life. But there's more than that. There's the daily practice too. Gail and I both observe daily devotionals. Our lives begin with that. I've talked about that elsewhere. But I think one of my favorite things, Gail, about our spiritual life together is what we do at night. Do you want to just talk about that as we go to bed?
Well, we pray together every night, and usually we're just laying in bed and we hold hands with each other and we pray about our family and our loved ones and things that we're concerned about, people who have needs that we want to pray about. And so it's just a wonderful way to end the day and to, again, place everything at the feet of our God.
Yeah, and it's a way to not go to bed worrying about things, because you kind of offload that. I like to think of it as outsourcing my worry, you know, to somebody that really can do something about it, which is God. And then I can go to sleep and we can rest well together. But it's an important, intimate time of us connecting as well. Mm-hmm. Those are a few things that have helped us. You know, there's praying before meals for us. And I know in the Jewish tradition, there's often prayer after meals. And then you've got on top of that, the observance of religious holidays. And so for us, all these holidays, like for us, Christmas and Thanksgiving, you know, those are things that we take seriously and contextualize those with our faith and not divorce them or try to give them meaning apart from our faith, like so much of secular society tries to do.
The other thing is that it gives us structure. You know, the thing about a church yearly calendar and so forth is that it provides a rhythm to life. And we know that these religious holidays, Christmas and Easter, for example, are going to happen every winter, every spring. We have those rhythms to look forward to. And in the Eastern Orthodox tradition, we have many other ones too throughout the year.
Like Lent and
right. We observe
Easter.
Lent and Advent and things like that. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just like the skeleton that everything else hangs on.
Well, it's much like the weekly cycle that Evan's talking about with the meaning of the Sabbath in Jewish life. And for us, it has a similar context, but we weren't made to just constantly surge, to always be on. So there's this rhythm of surging and then relaxing or retreating, couldn't get the word out, or resting. you know, and so our life has to have that kind of rhythm back and forth. Otherwise, you're going to burn out. You're going to burn out yourself. You're going to burn out your family. Your marriage is going to blow up. Lots of bad things
and
then happen.
And in an entrepreneurial world, there's a lot of unpredictability, a lot of chaos oftentimes. And so, again, it just gives you grounding. It's a way to ground yourself.
Yep. Excellent. Okay, let's hear from Jackie.
Hi, my name is Jackie Alvarado, and this question is for Gail in reference to podcast number 69. As a supporting wife, have you ever felt inadequate as you see your husband climb in success and opportunity? How have you managed those feelings?
Hi, Jackie. This is a great question. And my answer is yes and no. Yes, I've felt inadequate, and no, I don't feel inadequate. So I'll take the no part first. And I think the reason that I can say no, I don't feel inadequate, as I've watched my husband succeed and, you know, accomplish so much. The reason that I can say that I don't feel inadequate is because we share so much and we experience it together. It's like, you know, we are succeeding. It's not his successes, but it's our successes. And I've talked a lot about, I talked some about that maybe in the 69, but also in the last podcast, we talked about how Michael gives me the gift of inclusion. And I just love that. I love that so much because it's the message is we're in this together. And I just can't think of anything, any other place I'd rather be.
Yeah, we win together, we lose together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I want you to feel like you're part of the team. And if we succeed, it's only possible because you were involved. You know, your contribution is equally important.
And that's true. Let's just say.
Yeah. Let the record show.
But part of it too that works for us, and I know this isn't the case for everybody, is that I don't have achiever in my list of strengths.
It's my number one strength.
It's his number one. It's probably my number 50. So I'm just not competitive by nature. So that does help in this kind of relationship. But now for the yes part, when I have felt inadequate, it's interesting because as a teenager and as a college student, I was just a very confident girl. I had little fear. I loved taking risks and adventure. I loved being put into new situations and meeting new people and all that kind of thing. And then somehow that part of me was lost, or at least was buried, after I got married and then began a family. And I stopped working outside the home, which was our choice, and we talked about it, and that was something we both wanted to make possible for me to do. And so, the unintended consequence of that was that I stopped pursuing things that I wanted to pursue. It was just the routine stuff of life and maintaining a home and a family. And probably the first time I felt the most inadequate, and I know there were times along the way, but was when my children became more independent. And so I wasn't carpooling anymore. I wasn't helping with the homework and all that kind of thing. And so I just wasn't sure. I had some free time on my hands now, and I wasn't sure what to do with it. I didn't know who I was. What did I have to offer the world uniquely, you know, that was just me. And I could not answer that question. And that really scared me. So I got into some counseling and read some very good books about it. And so I feel like I'm just kind of beginning this journey of discovery now of who I am and what I have to offer. But I wish that I would have started it earlier.
I was going to ask you that. Like, what would you advise to the person who's listening to this who may be feeling inadequate and maybe they're on the front end of their journey? What would you say to them? How do you avoid what you experienced, which was to try to fix that at the, you know, further on in your life?
I think some of this would become evident in the life plan. I had no idea what a life plan was when we were, you know, starting all these things in our life. And I wish that I would have had a life plan, because it sort of forces you to look at all the areas of your life. And one of those areas of your life is your personal development and things like that. So what I would do now is I would encourage you to go to michaelhyatt.com/lifeplan, download that life plan, get out there and do it. Get with your spouse, take a full day, just, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night if you can, or a weekend if you're able to do something like that. And each one independently work on your life plans and then get together and talk about them. I just think that would solve so much. But as you're doing that, then I would think you would probably discover that you want to keep your finger in something that is uniquely you. So sort of apart from your spouse, but it's something you enjoy that refuels you and energizes you, and where you have a sense of accomplishment and forward movement and contribution.
Yeah, and I would say too, and I know this question Jackie directed towards Gail, but I think this is, again, appropriate self-care. You know, and ultimately, it's a way of caring for your family, because if you don't take care of yourself and make sure that you're finding a sense of fulfillment and that your talents, if those are not being developed and you're not meeting those needs, it's ultimately going to come out in bad ways. So go ahead and pursue that. And as Gail said, articulate it in a life plan or some mechanism to talk about it.
And when you are growing as an individual, you're a more interesting person.
Oh, this is a good point.
So it really enriches the whole marriage. The second thing I thought of was that it's important to continue to build friendships and develop support.
Yes.
Outside of your family. And also to take initiative with things like schedule some trips with your family or do some things that, like, I remember we mentioned it in the last podcast, but where we wanted to go hiking together and I took the initiative to set up that vacation. We went to North Carolina. We bought the equipment we wanted to use, but I took that initiative. And I think sometimes as the supportive spouse, the other spouse is so busy and wrapped up in the business that kind of thing can get overlooked. So you may have to take some initiative.
That's a good point. Jackie had another question, a follow-on for me.
Hi, Michael. My name is Jackie Alvarado, and I am married to an entrepreneur. My question for you is, as an entrepreneur and someone who supports a family, how have you dealt with managing the weight of that, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally? And have there been times where the weight has gotten the best of you? What lesson have you learned through that?
Jackie, thank you for recognizing that in entrepreneurs, because I do think that we feel the weight of it. You know, I think for many of us who are business owners or leaders, we have a heightened sense of responsibility. And so these things weigh on us. I can't just leave these things undone or hope that somebody else takes the responsibility or provides for my family or figures it out. And sometimes, to be honest, that does feel overwhelming. I know there are many nights, particularly in the midst of the recession, when I was the CEO of a large company, that I did feel overwhelmed. I didn't know how I was going to make the decisions. I felt inadequate. I didn't feel like I had enough wisdom. I felt like I was having to choose between bad and worse. There were no good choices in the middle of that as we were laying off people and trying to keep the ship afloat. But it was tough. And I think that, to kind of go back to Evan's question, I think that for me, my faith gave me context and that sense, like Jim Collins talks about in the Stockdale Paradox, where I had that ultimate sense that I would prevail in the end. You know, and that was something that came from my faith, that ultimately I would triumph and whatever it was I was going through would be something that would be used in my life story for the benefit of other people. And at the same time, and this is the other part of the Stockdale Paradox, to be brutally realistic about whatever I'm going through, you know, not try to sugarcoat it, not try to dismiss it. And fortunately, and I think this is part of the gift that Gail brought to me, is that I never felt like I was alone. She made me feel like she was in this with me, that it wasn't totally up to me. She was willing to do whatever was necessary. And she gave me the emotional support. And whether that was praying with me or just letting me talk it out and be free to express my doubts, my sense of inadequacy, my fear, and I've really struggled a lot with fear through my life, and she hasn't made me wrong for expressing that. And that's been a huge gift to me. She'll listen to it, and then she might ask a question that gives it some context and helps me come to resolution, but at least I didn't feel like I had to hide that. And that was hugely, hugely helpful, because a lot of these things do resolve themselves if you can talk about it. That's why, by the way, counseling is often so helpful. It's not that the counselor or the therapist is so brilliant, but you just get a chance to express it in a context where you're not being judged. Gail, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, well, I just first of all want to echo the fact that communication is key, absolutely key. If this high-achieving spouse feels like they're in it all alone and they can't talk about it, then I can't think of anything worse than trying to carry a load all by yourself. I do remember one time, actually more than one time, when you talked about, you referred to yourself as the lone donkey carrying all this weight. You know, it's funny she would use the word weight because that's exactly how you felt. And that, you know, and sadly what happens oftentimes is that the family can kind of coast and feel entitled to everything that you're providing, and they can just keep piling on more and more demands and wants and needs and all, and more lessons they want, or they need an outfit for this, or the car needs fixing, or, you know, just pile on. And here you feel like this little donkey that's trying to carry the whole load. So as a supporting spouse, I think we need to remember or try to imagine what that feels like and say, where can I help take some of these loads off?
Well, that's where the gift of gratitude, which we talked about in the first part of this series, comes in and is so important, because you've expressed that gratitude, which also gives me the sense that I'm not alone and that my work is being noticed, acknowledged, and recognized. So great, great question, Jackie. Now we've got a tough question. Okay, this one is from Jake.
Hi, Michael. This is Jake Olson. I blog at mnhometown.com. Sometimes. I've heard it said that behind every great man is a woman who believes in him. What would you say to the man whose wife doesn't believe he can do great things and frankly wants him to be content with a 9-to-5 job and a life that's less than extraordinary? How can that guy encourage his wife to come along with him for the journey of believing great things are possible?
Jake, I think to go back to something Gail said at the very beginning, there has to be a larger conversation, an ongoing conversation that you have with your spouse, where you're able to articulate your dreams and your shared vision. To me, that's where it all begins. And if they're not supportive and they want you to go back to a 9-to-5, maybe it's because you haven't enrolled them in a larger vision. And so I think to talk about that, why that's important and why you can't just get that from a 9-to-5. I think also to listen carefully to what your spouse's objections might be, because it may be at the end of the day that they're just frustrated because they feel like they're always broke, or this thing that you're pursuing is not benefiting the family. And that can be an extraordinarily frustrating thing for them as well. It may just really be about money, but I think it's important for you to be able to answer that or ask that question and to kind of tease it out and make sure that you understand it and not make the other person wrong for expressing it. I think you've got to give them the freedom to disagree with you, to express their discontent perhaps, and just get it out there, because these are the kinds of things that when they're buried and they're left unexpressed will not serve your marriage. They'll not serve you as an entrepreneur, and you've got to give them a theater, if you will, for expressing that if you're going to address it. Gail, would you add anything to that?
Well, again, it sounds like a broken record, but it really always comes back to communication. And so if you find that you're not able to communicate and you just kind of keep coming up against a brick wall, then I say figure out how you can improve your communication skills. Do whatever it takes. That's just the basic level.
Yeah, get counseling, go to a seminar, read a book, do something, because those skills are skills that are worth investing in. They'll serve you for your entire life.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that, again, a part of that communication would be finding out what is the real issue. Yep. You know, maybe, and this, there may be some listeners out there that this is going to apply to, and I don't know, but maybe you don't have the particular skills that an entrepreneur really needs. I mean, maybe the wife or the spouse sees something in you that you're blind to, and you have this great enthusiasm and great vision for what you want, but you just don't have some skill that's necessary to make that come to pass, and that spouse sees it in you. And so you might need to just keep drilling down, find out what is the real issue.
Now, this is a tough one. I think of a couple that we knew maybe 20 years ago, and he decided he wanted to be a golf pro. And so they moved to Nashville, and she actually worked for me for a period of time. And she was very accommodating, but she said, okay, let's give this, like, I think they gave it like 18 months. Let's see if you can get into whatever the school is to qualify as a golf pro. And you play every day, I'll support the family. And if you can make it, great. But at some point you have to decide, is this a calling or is it a hobby? And the difference between those two is the ability to make income. You know, can you make a living off what you feel like your calling is, or is it really going to drive a wedge in your marriage and blow up everything else? So give it a reasonable amount of time, but you just can't pursue this forever.
We see this a lot with creative people.
Yes.
Being in Nashville, we have a lot of creatives, music, songwriters and musicians,
authors,
and people like that. And they're broke. They just can't make a living, but they can't let their dream go.
And that's why this is art, not science, because whenever you start out as an entrepreneur, you know, there's going to be a lot of investment, a lot of work before you start making any money. And so you can't be impatient if you're the supportive spouse. There's got to be a reasonable expectation. But again, to go back to our original point, you've got to talk this out.
And count the cost ahead of time.
Yep.
Together, so you know what you're signing up for.
Absolutely. Okay, the next question comes from John.
Hi, Michael and Gail. My name is John Pavetti, and I have a blog and podcast over at blog.tradertechtalk.com. Thank you for doing this excellent podcast series. I'm a business owner for a decade and only recently launched a new online business. And my wife and I have had many of the same struggles and conversations that you and Gail have had. So I appreciate that you've taken the time to teach us how to manage some of these difficulties of being an entrepreneur or being married to one. So here's my question. Can you address the topic of the supporting person helping out in the business? There's a lot of things that my wife does in our business, most of the accounting, for example, that she does much better than I could. But sometimes I want to try and do it all and take it back. And then other times I feel I need to get more help on things. And that balance shifts from time to time. It's hard to know how much to let go of and how much to do myself. And it's hard to know how to make the changes in the roles and the amount of work that we do. Thanks for all you do.
John, I definitely think this is possible. It can work, but you have to be cautious. And you've got to consider what your spouse's strengths are and not put them in a position where they're going to lose from the get-go. I can think back in some situations where we had our business that I thought it might be a good idea if Gail, for example, managed the books, if she did the accounting. The problem is that's not Gail's strength. She didn't have any prior experience. I was setting her up for failure, and I was setting our marriage up for conflict.
Well, what's funny about that now, not then, but now, is that I remember that there were days when I wanted to help so bad. I wanted to participate with you. I wanted to do a good job for you, and I just couldn't do it. And I remember feeling and expressing this to you, that I felt like I was a person who had been flying paper airplanes, and you were asking me to sit in the cockpit of a 747 and fly this jet. And I didn't have a clue how to do it. And I just felt like there was so much at stake, and there was just so much pressure, and it was awful.
Yeah, and it was bad for our marriage, and we did have a lot of conflict over that, because I'm not particularly gifted at that either. And so the best thing we could do was to outsource that to somebody who was. But for me to assess what Gail's strengths are, and this is going to be different in every relationship. I know of situations where the supporting spouse is terrific in that kind of role and, you know, serves a very important function as part of the team. But in our role with Gail, I have to recognize that her biggest contribution is her counsel to me, her empathy, her ability to listen and really distill the wisdom in the situation and what the next right action ought to be. And so I treat her almost as a business coach or as a board member, as somebody who's a co-equal and somebody whose advice and counsel that I really seek. And that's invaluable. You know, all that other stuff can be outsourced. And in fact, the business coaching and the counseling and the board kind of stuff, all that can be outsourced as well. But don't put your spouse in a position that they're going to lose. And let me just say this one other thing too. I think this is an issue of leadership and delegation and learning to do that well, but you can't give it to someone and then take it back. You know, you've got to be patient when you delegate something to anyone. I don't care if it's your spouse or a virtual assistant, there's going to be a period of time when you're going to think to yourself, it would have been faster if I had just kept this and done it myself. That's the nature of all delegation. And you got to be patient and work through that, because it will take longer initially, but eventually it will save you time.
That's excellent. And, you know, it's funny, I had my hair done today. I was talking to my hairstylist because he's an entrepreneur. He started this salon that I go to and took some major risks with a young family getting it going. And he said that when he started it, he had expectations of what support would look like for his wife to support him in this business venture. And he thought it meant that she'd be answering the phone, that she would be making appointments, that she would be stocking the shelves. That was her way of supporting. But she didn't particularly want to do that. She wanted to raise a family and she had other things that she wanted to do. And so he had to kind of recalibrate how she was going to support him, and they've had to work through that. And so sometimes it can be really hard trying to figure out how you're going to be a team.
So excellent, excellent questions. I think this has been my favorite episode. I've loved just, you know, kind of the freewheeling answering these questions, these real life questions from people. But I hope this has been helpful to you. And I hope this is a series that you can come back to again, depending on where you're at in your entrepreneurial or your leadership journey. But Gail and I really believe, and we just want to offer you this hope, that it is possible to accomplish your dreams, fulfill your role as a leader or an achiever or a business entrepreneur, whatever it may be, without blowing up your marriage. And for me, my marriage is paramount. I know it is for Gail, and I hope that it is for you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this series. So here's the question that I'd like you to answer, and that is, what have you learned about entrepreneurship or leadership and marriage? What have been the things that have really saved your bacon, that have really helped you as a couple? And you can respond to that question in the comment section of the show notes, which you can find at michaelhyatt.com/71, as in episode 71. I'd love to hear from you. Gail would love to hear from you, and we'll respond to the comments and the questions there. We look forward to interacting with you, but I'll be back in a few minutes with some final announcements. Thanks.
Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. This is your life. Are you who you want to be?
Welcome back. I got just a few quick announcements. Number one, my 2013 reader survey. You can find this at michaelhyatt.com/survey. And I would really love to hear from you. One of the things I'm trying to do is figure out what my content plan, my podcast plan, my blogging plan is going to be for this next year, 2014. And I want to get your input. I want to find out what's working for you, what's not working for you, and a little bit more about you so I can better dial in to what your specific needs are. So again, you can take that survey at michaelhyatt.com/survey. It'll just take you a few minutes, and I'd be so grateful if you would do that. Second, my new ebook, The Virtual Assistant Solution, was just released a few days ago. It's available on Amazon. You can find out more about it at michaelhyatt.com/virtualassistant. And if you thought to yourself, I'm overwhelmed with the amount of work I've got, but I can't really afford to take on a full-time employee, this ebook is for you. It's only $2.99, but it'll help you think through the possibilities of having a virtual assistant, how to get started, some of the pitfalls that you can avoid, and how to get more done and really focus on the stuff that you love and are the most capable of doing and offload the rest. Then I want to talk to you about just quickly about WordPress setup. And you've heard me talk about this before, but if you're thinking about building a platform or you are trying to build a platform so that you can connect with an audience for your products and services, you've got to have a self-hosted WordPress site like I do at michaelhyatt.com. And I've got a free screencast you can find at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. In 20 minutes, I walk you through the process of setting up a self-hosted WordPress site, and embedded in that screencast is a special discount link so that you can get blog hosting for $3.95 a month, which is a dollar off Bluehost regularly advertised price. And then finally, the next podcast, we're going to get back to our regularly scheduled programming next week. I'm going to be talking about 5 strategies for building new habits. So if there's habits you've wanted to acquire, even bad habits you want to get rid of, I'm going to talk about the psychology of habits and how you can use that to your advantage. you've got a question about any topic, because next week we're going to get back to the random questions. If you've got a question about any topic, go to michaelhyatt.com/podcast question, record a voicemail, and then I'll take it on the next episode or a subsequent one. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. The show notes, you can find those at michaelhyatt.com/71. If you found value in this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you go to michaelhyatt.com/love and share the love and give us some visibility so that other people can find this podcast and enjoy it as well. And then if you could rate my podcast on iTunes, that would help people discover the podcast inside of iTunes. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. So is your marriage. Now go make it count.